Thursday morning, December 11th, 2025. It is the Beating the Book podcast, Megapod week number 15 in the National Football League, live from the beautiful Sirius XM studios at the Wynn Hotel Las Vegas Strip, the home of our Megapod all year long. Jeremiah Crow on the ones and twos, making it all happen on the show today. Gil Alexander, I hope that this goes well, because I believe I relinquished my lead to Todd Wishnev this past week. We'll find out momentarily. Two staples of the show before we introduce our guest from his mom's cork attic in Pittsburgh, PA, Squirrel Hill, Toddy Wishnev, on a college basketball heater, by the way, as well. What's happening, Toddy?
What's up? How are you?
Doing very well. I don't even want to make direct eye contact with you because the college basketball thing's going so well. Like, it's ridiculous how good it's going. So, and no direct eye contact. I don't want to do anything to jinx you. Have you shaved since this is
no.
all happened? Please do not.
No shave, no shower for 38 days.
It's disgusting, but we'll take it. As long as
I'm just kidding. I've actually thrown in a couple of showers. I'm kidding.
Oh, that's good. At T Wishnet on Twitter, by the way. Will Hill, not from his mom's cork attic, the host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast at Not The Will Hill on Twitter. Willie, sir.
That's funny you say that, because I'm actually doing this from my mom's cork attic. I switched locations. No, I'm where I'm normally at. And yeah, Todd has been so great. Appreciative of Todd. We even forgive the fact that he always doesn't always list when it's an extra game or the games at halftime. Some of the people in the group chat get annoyed by that. But when you're doing this well, it's almost forgiven.
These people are unbelievable, Gilly. I'm watching stats. I'm watching the game. I'm trying to figure out what I want to bet. I'm looking at all the different books. I have to run to the kiosk to make a bet. Then I also have to remember, when I post it for all these ne'er-do-wells, to put an X if Southern's playing, or if some team, NJIT or something, there's an extra board. When, by the way, all the legal books make no distinction anymore anyways. But these people, and I won't say who these people are, but Willie is a little bit of a groupie of such a guy, whose name starts with an F, is the most annoying people in the world with this extra board nonsense.
Yeah. Well, we forgive you. But, you know, try to put X in there when it's X. Try to let us know when it's halftime. You know,
just one letter, Todd.
Let me introduce today's guest and our Megapod historian, Tim Lawson at The Better Life, who's done such a great job of paying tribute to the Megapod in its 15th year. He always has a background for every one of the guests in terms of their appearances here. And the guests may not know all this stuff. This is Dr. Bob's 14th appearance on the Beating the Book NFL Megapod. His debut was week 9 of 2013 for the Betting Dork feed. On his 14 episodes, there three were in the postseason. However, Bob's first appearance on this feed predates all of the Megapods altogether. I remember this very well. It's the first time I ever met Bob. Featured on the Betting Dork podcast in August of 2011, just before the first official Megapod season had begun. I had emailed Bob and he emailed me back. Turns out we lived like 7 blocks away from each other. And then we went to Oshiatai maybe 5,000 times after that in San Francisco. My mentor, my friend, Tim goes on to say, in those early seasons of the NFL Megapod, the format was different than the structure we're familiar with today. The first game discussed was not the Thursday night game, but rather the primetime games. That's right. We used to do it backwards, Monday and Sunday nights. In fact, Thursday night games were never addressed because the show was recorded and released on Fridays. There were not three best bets provided by panelists. Bets for the primetime games were announced. Then each panelist provided their favorite bet on the Sunday slate. Teaser segments, not a thing until Todd became the co-host in 2019. And lastly, underdog moneyline sprinkles were accompanied by Sprinkle Me by E40. Yes, we did that as well. And then we'll introduce Bob, but a question from the historian. Dr. Bob mentioned in his 2013 debut that he was not handicapping the NFL for his service that season for more work-life balance. Tim asks, what has changed since then? Is he able to manage that same balance now with a family? Dr. Bob, pioneer in using models to predict the outcomes of sporting events, joins us from his place in Colorado. How you doing, Bob?
Doing fine. You know, I'm wondering, I don't recall ever being worse than 2-1 on the three best bets on the Megapod. I know in the last 6 years, I've been at least 2-1 every single time. And I'm wondering if that historian knows if it goes back further.
You know, he usually tabulates it for guests, but for whatever reason, he didn't do it for you. I don't know why.
I do not recall, and I keep good records. So I've been at 3-0 or 2-1 every single year. I come on once a year, at least in the last 6 years.
So I have a few questions for you. One, Tim's question right there about 2013. Do you remember saying that about work-life balance? You were like, I need more work-life balance.
Back in 2013. Yeah, I gave up the NFL for like 4 years. Part of it was college football is just taking up so much time. And I kept adding layers to what I was doing in college football. And the NFL model, which worked really well for a lot of years, had gone on like a six-year run where it wasn't working as well. I had a model in my head that I wanted to do using play-by-play advanced metrics, using play-by-play data. And I just didn't have the time or the programming skill set, database skill set to do it at the time. So I quit the NFL, I think, for 4 years. And I came back and hired a guy for 1 year, this guy named George, who worked with me for 1 year to set up the database and let's work on this model. That model wasn't the model I wanted. But the next year, I hired Tanner Buzik, who you know.
Yeah.
And Tanner, we worked on the model together to kind of make it the way I envisioned it. And since then, the NFL's been fantastic. And Tanner's taken over basically all of the model part of that. I still do like the technical analysis stuff, which still works in the NFL. People don't think it does, but fine. They could think it doesn't because I know it does because I keep track of everything. And it's been a good mix. I mean, NFL's been 58% best bets in, 9 years of the model. So I'll take that. Better than my college record, which is what I'm known for. So
yeah.
Technical analysis. Once I got the new model programmed, then I thought, okay, I'll come back. And I don't have to work on it full time because I got Tanner to do managing the model. And once he learned how I adjust for players, he's taken it to a different level. And our adjustments for all players, I think, is better than anyone in the market. So it's been good.
And technical analysis, for those who are wondering what that means, what Bob is referring to is what we colloquially know as trends. So Bob does his math model. Then he has this access to the Buckeye database all the way back to 1978. So that will either buttress a bet, will take him off bets because he has some balance between the two. This is from Twitter, Bob. Anthony Ventresca. You've explained this before on previous shows, but I think it's always good to do this again. He says, I can't wait for the Megapod later. If you get a chance, could you ask Dr. Bob how he got into sports gambling? Not sports gambling, how he got into sports modeling. I've messed around with making models some, but would love to hear how he got started. Did you tell that story again?
Yeah, I was at Berkeley and I was a bowler. My dad was a professional bowler, actually. So I was a bowler, a junior bowler in the state of California, traveling around with my dorkiness and my bowling ball. And so I was at the bowling alley at Berkeley. They had a rec center down there with a bowling alley and video games and whatnot. The guy that ran the bowling alley had a football pool. And I thought, oh, all right, I'll get into that. It's $2. So I'm a statistics major. So I try to come up with a model to predict football. And I had like the NFL betting, the NFL statistical guide or whatever they had at the time that had all the previous stats for however many years. I went back 5 years.
What year was
punched
this?
Punched it all into the mainframe at Berkeley. This is 1986, probably.
Okay.
85 or 86.
He was going to mention it, Todd. Let him finish.
Jesus.
Probably 85 when that happened. And so we didn't have personal computers. There were a few, like the Commodore 64 or whatever. But so I had access to the mainframe computer at the statistics lab in Berkeley. So I entered a bunch of data in, came up with some fairly simple models, looking back, fairly simple. But at the time, they probably were decent. So the first week, I go and I enter my pool. I think there were 14 games back then. There were 28 teams. And I never knew what a point spread was. I'm like, oh, point spread, that's interesting. Okay. And I just compared what I came up with. And I went 12-2 against the spread the first week and won the pool. $2 turned into $102. And suddenly I was very interested in this. The next week I came in second and won $40. And I'm like, whoa, okay, this is fun. And so I just started digging into it, updating my models, et cetera. And of course, two or three years later, I started my business. So I think that was 84, probably 84. And then by 87, I started my business and my models were much better after 3 years of tinkering around. I started doing technical analysis, which was basically based on time series analysis, which is basically like regression with waves, like sines and cosines, with frequencies, and how teams, I did a big study on how teams will oscillate in certain patterns over the course. And there's different patterns. There's one like biweekly pattern, and there's one like half seasonal pattern, and the ebbs and flows and combining all that stuff. It got me into the technical analysis part of it. So I started combining those and did really well early on, and the rest, you know, and then obviously I just keep building on my knowledge and coming up with new ways to find value. So, but that's the way it started. I just got lucky and like, I'll enter this pool, goofed around, did well the first 2 weeks. I wonder, had I not done so well those first two weeks, whether I would have given up.
That's right.
Possibly.
We'll never know.
Who knows?
And then by 2005, Bob is moving college football lines massively on release. He's in the Wall Street Journal. ESPN is doing a whole feature on him. And the rest is history. By the way, that first podcast that you and I did together in 2011, the Betting Door podcast, you covered a lot of that. If people can find that, it's just like an hour and a half of nothing but Bob and his process. And I think like predictions for the 2011 college football season at that time. Do you remember what you thought at the time? By the way, just a selfish question. Were you like, what the hell is this guy? Let me suss him out. Because we went to lunch first, right? You're like,
yeah, I met you.
Yeah.
And, I liked you and we had a lot in common. Like I felt like we had similar growing up experiences.
Yeah.
Being big into sports and baseball cards and different things. I felt we had a very similar growing up experience and
Baseball
and
cards. I remember that.
You like Thai food and I like Thai food and what else do you need, really?
And the rest is history.
I actually remember.
Do you still have cards, Bob? Do you still have baseball cards?
I ended up selling my baseball card collection for about $100,000 before I went to college in 1983.
What was your best card?
It was probably, I had a Mickey Mantle, but I think my most valuable card was a Pete Rose rookie card in mint condition.
Wow. What year did you sell it?
1983, but I had cards going back to the 50s.
Yeah.
You know, Gilly, I think you're the same way. There was a time where, man, that was just like the most important thing to me was baseball. You get the newest Beckett. It was just like, that's all I needed. Yep. It was my cards, Beckett, and forget it.
Yeah, I started a business. I sold, when I was 13 years old, I advertised in the Baseball Digest. At the back, they had little ads, classified section, Baseball Digest. And I advertised, you know, send self-addressed stamped envelope for my price list. And I typed out a price list every month. And then send it out to whoever requested a price list. And then once a month, I get orders coming in. And once a month, I'd go to the UPS store. It's like 25 minutes away. My dad would drive me. And we'd package everything up. And I'd send out the stuff. That was my first business. I was 13 years old. And I was bringing in like $1,000 a month. You know, as a 13-year-old.
It's amazing. Because if you try doing that 10 years later, it's worth nothing almost. Certainly 20 years later, after they saturated the entire baseball. Although the old card still had some value. I'm not sure.
Yeah, this was when Donruss and Fleer had just kind of gotten. When I was 13, I think maybe those had just started coming on board. It was just Topps at the time.
Yeah. It really, Will, to answer your question, I thought all my rookie Bonds cards were going to make me a millionaire. Oh. Are you kidding me? I have like 13 rookies. It's nothing now. This is absolutely
By the way, I remember hearing of Dr. Bob back in the mid-2000s. I'm saying 2004, 2005, 2006. I remember I was on some message board and the arguments were about Fezzik record keeping and Dr. Bob was somehow some kind of umpire on it. And I didn't know who any of these characters were. I was just living in Los Angeles, you know, selling insurance and whatever. And I remember reading these message boards with all these people on there. This guy named Cutter who would bet the +1.5 in baseball every day, and Fezzik, and Dr. Bob was like the umpire to all of them, and it was like a war.
That was not the case.
What'd you say?
That was not the case. I didn't know who Fezzik was until a couple years later. Like, he had won these college football handicapping contests, and I'd heard through the grapevine he used my plays.
He subscribed.
Those lines were set earlier in the week, and I'd release my plays on Thursdays, and the lines would all move, but he'd use all of my plays in the contest, and that was 2004, 2005. In those 2 years, I was probably 66% winners.
But what am I thinking of, Dr. Bob, when I say that you were doing some kind of, or maybe it wasn't you, maybe it was somebody else. I thought that you were like somehow like the arbiter of everyone's record. Is there anything like
nope,
that?
I did not do anything like that. I didn't care what anyone else was betting.
Yeah. Okay.
I could care less. So I really don't pay attention
to
other handicappers. I never have.
Last question, Bob, before we go on to the show here. If someone were starting, if someone wanted to start modeling today, what's your bit of advice? What do they do first?
I've said this on your show before. I think whatever it is they do, whatever they think impacts a bet, whether it's, oh, an injury is worth more than the market's making of it, or a trend, or I think this guy's undervalued and he's the starter and maybe he's just as good as the backup's just as good as the starter, whatever. But whether it's line value, injury value, trend, whatever you are basing your bets on, make a list of the different things you think makes it a good bet. First of all, and keep track in a spreadsheet of, like, this bet is like, oh, it's injury value and a trend. It's, you know, and you put ones in those columns. Keep track of everything you base your bets on. And over time, you'll start to realize, like, oh, that doesn't work at all. Or, you know, it takes some time. But as far as actually building a model, find out, a lot of people use regression. Right. And that's a good place to start. Like, what matters? Like, and you'll find out, well, turnovers are the single most important factor in winning and losing bets. Turnovers are also the least predictive of all those metrics. So what you need to do is find out, the best thing to do is take the statistics that are important to success on a football game or basketball game, whatever, and find ways to take past statistics and predict future statistics. So maybe you say, all right, I want to look at all these stats in the first 8 weeks of the season and see how they project to the second half of the season. You get an idea of how well statistics project going forward. Then you could build your model based on projections, not past results. If you have a model based on regression and you say, well, this team's plus 10 in turnovers, wow, my model really likes them, you're going to end up with a contrary model. Because it's going to be picking the team that's had turnover luck, you know, and usually those are bad bets. So find ways to predict future statistics. My models tend to predict future statistics, especially my college football model. And I build a box score, predicted box score based on that. And then I project the score based on the projected metrics.
I don't
use points at all in my models. Points are variable.
Be able, you know, to distinguish what is sustainable and what is unsustainable.
Right, yeah. Right. What is luck and what is not? Like, basically, take out the variance in a team's performance, and then you can start with points. I know people have built models starting with point differentials and have a compensated point differential model, and then they take out turnover luck, and they take out, and then they start take out the variance, and then start adjusting for injuries. That's a decent model, but you have to know where the variance is and how much of that is luck and how much is real.
Yeah. Am I misremembering though that you were moving lines like hugely in the 2004, 2005, 2006?
Two and a half, 3 points. Okay, I bet a 3.5 point favorite to go to 7.
Right. Okay. So like that's what I'm remembering on those boards.
Yeah.
That people would be talking about Dr. Bob, and I would always be like, who's this Dr. Bob character? And they would be like, oh, the line's going to move 3 points. Dr. Bob. Everyone was talking about it. And that's when I remember hearing about you back in those days. And like,
yeah, they still move, but no one's moving 3 points. I mean, the market's way more efficient now than it was in 2005.
Right.
As I mentioned earlier, Todd, that was the year 2005 where he was moving. In that ESPN special, who Foistel is going to the window as soon as you're released, he's going to the window. You know, no.
See if he can get the line. And
that's right.
No, of course he knew he couldn't. He was just doing that for the cameras. He knew by the time he walked up to the window, the line would have moved 2 points.
Is there a guy named Computer Bob also, like somebody named Computer?
I don't know.
That's who I'm confusing. That's what I was confusing with.
Okay. What I was going to say, last thing on this, one of my favorite Dr. Bob-isms, and we'll wrap it up with this, out of many Dr. Bob-isms, is the ability with which you can overcome negative variance is also a great barometer as to the extent that you will be a successful sports bettor. But it also applies to life, right? The ability you can overcome negative variance in life. But that's
don't overreact to negative variance.
That's right.
And that in life, in everything, there are going to be bad times and good times in life, bad times and good times in sports betting. You have to understand what is variance and what, you know, like stay the course. You know, if you think you're doing the right thing, then stay the course and don't overreact to short-term variance, which people do all the time in life and investments and love and everything else. Just try to be as even keeled as you can and stick with, you know, if it's been some time and your life's not working out or your love life's not working, then maybe readjust, but don't overreact to short-term fluctuations that are ultimately going to happen in all facets of life.
Yeah. Rufus says that all the time too, is like we, and I agree with him. I tend to view things in life now through probabilities because you bet so much, right? And so you tend to, the lens of life sort of, as sports betting reflects the human condition, you sort of walk through life that way once you do this long enough. Okay. Thank you for that, Bob.
Can you guys analyze my statistical with the ladies? Because I could open any group of ladies and give them six strong innings with maybe one hit ball. But then when you got to close, you know, I just blow the game up like Bednar, the Pirates, or somebody, you know, what's that guy, Devin Williams? I'm walking everybody in the ninth, you know, but I could open. I'm a world-class Hall of Fame opener. Closing? No, not so much.
You're the perfect wingman then, is what you're saying.
I'd be Hall of Fame wingman. Hall of Fame. If Gilly and me went out to a bar, Gilly would have, he wouldn't know what to do with himself. It would be ridiculous.
Is that your conclusion was? You'd have
you're
to be
climbing all over him.
Oh, man.
Jordan and Pippen.
Okay. Todd, the record, you're back in the lead.
Well, I'm back in my rightful place where I usually spend time after my 2-1. I tried to warn the masses about the Lions and the Cowboys, but Matt Brown didn't want to listen. Gilly didn't want to listen. And my good friend Willie didn't want to listen. And I went 2-1 to go 19-20-3, edging Gilly now with his 1-2 at 20-22 and barely getting past Mr. Wilver, who went 1-2 as well for 12-28-2. The guest seat, Matt Brown, also went 1-2 after a very hot stretch and is now at 23-18-1. So I have a very slight lead to try to get my third out of four seasons total title. And on the teaser world, Gilly's 5-9, Willie's 7-7, I'm 6-8, and the guest is 8-6. So the guest leads in both. Bob, there's a lot of pressure for you to keep up your 2-1, 3-0.
I feel no pressure. First of all, there should not be a championship awarded unless you are profitable.
I agree with that.
Actually, Bob, we've checked the statistics. And just as the NFL, a team with a losing record can in fact win the division, it happens as well here on the Megapod. Unfortunately, I don't make the rules. Talk to Dr. Goodell.
That's true. All right, fair enough.
It's Todd's podcast after all, Bob. You have to understand how this works. Okay, real quick before we get to the bets. Dumbo of the week, I have three candidates. Three candidates. I don't think this is a Dumbo of the week, but a lot of people on Twitter did. Pete Carroll, right? Less than a minute left, no timeouts from their own 28. They're down 10. They decide with 5 seconds left to kick a field goal. They cover the spread on that. Dave Portnoy loses his mind. He thinks people should go to prison. Some people think that's it's a fix. You know the whole conspiracy theory thing. Pete Carroll is your first candidate. I just thought I'd put that out there.
It's so funny that you said that, Gilly, because I wanted to nominate the world. Everyone who's saying that it's fixed. It's not Pete Carroll's fault. It's the world. These idiots who will tell you, see, it's fixed. I'm like, okay, so wait, let me understand. These are the best fixed people in the world who are running this brilliant fix, and they need Kenny Pickett to throw a pass over the middle to a guy who has to get the ball knocked out of his hand so that it's a delay of game penalty. By the way, the ref also has to call it. Then Pete Carroll also has to kick the field goal. I'm like, these are the dumbest people who have ever fixed a game before, if this is what they need to rely on.
You are correct. I should have said the world, not Pete Carroll. The world reacting to Pete Carroll is candidate number one. Andy Reid. Andy Reid is rarely a candidate here, but Andy Reid, 4th-and-1 at their own 31 with 10:22 left in a tie game. The Chiefs defense has just forced 5 punts, 4 of them 3 and outs, and he decides to go for it. Incomplete intended for Rashee Rice. Houston set up at the Kansas City 31. Of course, they score to go up 7. They end up winning the game by that same margin. That is candidate number two. And the last one is a sort of co-one between both Brian Schottenheimer and Dan Campbell. Do you remember this sequence? Lions are up 10. Dallas third and three of the Detroit 12. This is all the way back to last Thursday night. Ferguson flagged for an OPI instead of Anzalone for a defensive pass interference. Shouldn't have been pass interference on either of them. They call it. Campbell declines it to make it fourth and three. First Dumbo. And the
instead
Cowboys
of third and 18. By the way, instead of third and 18.
Right. Yeah. Cowboys say, I like your Dumbo. Watch this. Hold my beer. They say, we'll kick a field goal. We won't even go for it on fourth and three. So that's just a do. By the way, they kick the field goal and then the Lions go up 14 on the subsequent drive. Who's your winner? The world against Carroll, Andy Reid, or that combination between Schottenheimer and Campbell? Who's the worst?
I have a three-way tie. I think they're all horrible.
They're all bad.
So I'll go Andy Reid slightly over the world in overtime.
Bob, who's the worst of that?
I have no opinion. I tuned out of that entire
segment. Bob can't play along. Bob, do you want me to tell the fish story? Bob and I, with his lovely wife, I don't know if she was the wife at the time, we're at Milos here in Las Vegas. And, you know, they do a whole song and dance. They're like, you could walk up to the front there and take a look at all of our fish that you
was
order.
That the place we went that time with the parles and I brought my dressing because I was eating healthy?
No, that was not the place. Oh, this is a much more fancy establishment. And they go ahead and Bob says that. Bob, what did you say?
I go, and I start going into like a Seinfeld. I go, I don't want to see the fish. And you go into your Costanza.
Go see the fish. Bob. Just look at the fish.
You go look at the fish. I don't want to see the fish.
Bob doesn't like to play along with these gags.
I do not like fish. I know I'm not going to order fish in a fish restaurant.
Bob, get
I'm not going to look at them to make my stomach turn.
That's right.
So we basically did a Seinfeld skit, and they're trying to convince me, no, sir, you have to look at the fish.
He finally got up and looked at the fish, right? Didn't you?
I don't want to look at the fish.
I know.
What did you order, Bob?
I'm sure I ordered every fish restaurant has a steak somewhere on the menu.
You got something else.
Sea bass.
All right, Todd. Todd Wishtab, by the way, for those who don't know what we're alluding to, on his Discord, absolutely murdering college basketball over 80 units. Was there any NFL in game or anything you wanted to talk about before we do the bets?
Sure. We get to. I'm slightly profitable in NFL on in game this year, and a little bit better than that in college football. The one that I was just going to talk about, and this reflects into Willie, because Willie, I feel like, is the best at this late game stuff, the late game in game, and maybe he can opine as well. But I'm watching the Bengals play the Bills in a game that nobody's really stopping anyone in the snow. And now, because of Burrow's interceptions, it's now 39-28 at the end of the game with about 3 minutes to go. And they put up plus 10.5. It's an 11-point game. They put up plus 10.5, minus 110. I was like, why aren't they putting up the typical 7.5 where you have to decide whether they're going to get the field goal or the touchdown, right? Because they'd be down 11. They would have the incentive to kick a field goal if they got stopped, right? And usually the line there is, you know, 7.5 or something. So they don't want you, they want to make you figure it out, right? But they put up 10.5. And I was like, 10.5? Are you kidding me? The Bills haven't stopped them all day. They're not going to stop them in prevent down 11 with Burrow and all those receivers. Are you kidding me? So that was maybe like the easiest in game of the day. And you know, Willie, you'll get us on like these Chargers Eagles type game where it's like plus 340 at the end of the game when they're down, you know, and it's a field goal either way. And he's really good at those. I don't know if you have any of those this week, Willie, but you've had a couple that are just unbelievable.
No, I would say the third quarter tie is one that we've had some success with, where in a limited amount of possessions, especially in college, they'll hang like plus 450. Tulane, North Texas, the first quarter. I know it's an NFL pod, but first quarter tie was plus 450. They each had one possession. They each scored a touchdown. They were longer possessions. So you get some of those where ideally it's a defensive battle and it's going to be hard to get points. Titans, Browns with one where I know that's a sore subject because we both had Titans team total under half and nobody scored until the final minute. I think the Browns turned it over. And then still the Titans were in good shape. You just needed the clock to run once. And then I think Pollard busted it for a touchdown.
No, but long story short,
those ties in the third quarter.
A minute and a half to go. We have it all set up. Shador has the ball. All we need is the Titans not to score in the third quarter. There's a minute and a half left. He throws a ridiculous pass over the middle. It gets run back, but still we're fine. The Titans are not going to score in the last minute and 15 from the 40. And then they bust another run. It was like unbelievable. That was a real bad beat.
Will Hill is the plus half a run, five inning guy. He's the third quarter tie guy. He's the under first quarter in football game guy. And he's the late 4 minutes left in a college basketball guy.
Those are Willie specials. We call those Willie specials. Avenues. He also is the number one order of the rolls at Texas Roadhouse. If the lady comes over, he says, look, I've got this daughter here who can't stop eating rolls. Can you just bring a couple baskets right now?
Todd, I wasn't going to bring this up with all the Sharon Moore stuff, but you are currently being investigated for inappropriate relations with a pizza. I think it was a pepperoni pizza, so you should not be talking right now.
By the way, Will, I don't have those late four-minute and under bets. I don't have any outs with that. Last week, by the way, one of the more underrated moments of the last couple of Megapods was when I said I don't have some, and Will goes, yeah, you do. You have one of those. What I don't have. I really don't have those.
He's your gambling concierge. He's like, he knows, no, you do have
he
it.
He knows what I have. Bob, best bets. You first. What do you got?
What about Thursday night?
Thursday night. Do it. Does Thursday night football, is anything involved in the Cardinals, Falcons Buccaneers game today is one of your best bets, side or total?
I do. I have one of them.
Not, but I like a smaller play on the Thursday night game. Should I get into that now or wait for it?
Well, let's get Todd's best bet on that, and you can tell us what your small play is.
And I have one too.
No one's. I'm the only one who's doing an official play. Correct?
Is this one of your?
No, I'm doing one too.
No, it's not.
It's not. Okay. So Todd and Will both have a best bet? Yes? Okay.
Yeah, I do. I'm using over 44, I believe, is the line in the Tampa game. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Under's getting bet, but yeah,
it's 43.5 now as we tape.
43.5.
Okay. So I'm going to take over 43.5 in this Tampa game. I just think that Tampa all season before this lull was just a great over situation. They could move the ball on anybody and they were getting the ball moved on them by everybody. And, you know, the last couple games, they haven't really looked like themselves. But I kind of feel like we might see a turn back towards a typical Tampa game because, you know, it's not like Atlanta has been that great on defense like they seem to be early in the year. And also I think, you know, Tampa's letting everyone score. I mean, when Shuck can get 24 points on you, the Saints, I start to really question about the defense. They looked horrible against the Rams a couple weeks ago as well on defense. So I'm beginning to lose faith in the Tampa defense. And to me, 43.5, it's really not that high a number, you know, and I think Tampa can score. So I'm going to go over 43.5 in the Tampa game.
43.5 painted everywhere now for this ball game tonight. Will, you have a best bet too?
Good news for you, Toddy. I like the under. I think Atlanta wants to run the ball. Tampa ninth DVOA against the run defensively. Atlanta, Atlanta's pretty good against the pass, and Tampa wants to throw it. Atlanta's 13th in DVOA defensively against the pass. This game, the first time around, was 23-20. I think we got a similar type of game there. And Baker Mayfield, we talked about this in recent weeks. The Baker Mayfield MVP conversation, that is like a lifetime ago now. He has not played well for a long time. Division games that are rematches tend to trend under. Kirk Cousins on the other side. And last week, that was kind of a misleading final with Seattle and Atlanta. I think it was a 37-9 final, but that was 6-6 at halftime. Then a kickoff return and a bunch of turnovers got that score up and inflated a little bit. So I'll go under 43.5 here. I think this is a good matchup for both defenses, and I don't like the way Baker Mayfield is playing at all. And then some injury concerns. Worf, he might or might not play. London is out for Atlanta. I'm not sure what Evans' status is. Seems like
Evans
Tampa's
in,
always
I think
like
Worf's
Evans
in.
Oh, he is in. Okay.
Yeah.
Seems like they always have a host of guys questionable. But I will still go under 43.5.
Evans in for the Bucs. Jalen McMillan in, but Otten is out.
Is Owen Wright in?
Owen Wright is not. Owen Wright is on the practice squad. Thank you for asking. Still on the practice squad. Was elevated for a few weeks, now back on the practice squad. They do right by him, unlike the Baltimore Ravens. Bob, what was your unofficial play from Bob, but what is your play here?
Yeah, I released a half unit play on the Tampa Bay Atlanta under 44.5, and that means part of the reason why it dropped originally to 44, and now it's, I don't think I made it drop to 43.5. Baker Mayfield not only struggling lately, but this is not a good matchup for him. Atlanta's defense ranks second in the league in blitz rate, and they rank second in the league in single high safety coverage. Baker Mayfield is the worst in the league against the blitz relative to his yards per pass attempt against non-blitzing plays. And he's also among the worst in the league against single high safety relative to too high safety coverage. So this is the worst possible matchup for Baker Mayfield. So that's part of the reason, but and the model has 41.5 total points predicted. So Tampa Bay's got both starting guards. There's some other stuff going on here. But I released the under for half a unit at 44.5, only at 44 or more. So it's no longer qualifying.
So do you like Atlanta with all that negative Tampa Bay stuff? Do you like Atlanta, Bob?
Not necessarily. I don't really have much of an opinion. I think 4.5 is probably what the line should be, and it's up to 5.5 now. So I'd probably rather have Atlanta here at 5.5, but I think 4.5 or 5 is probably what the true line should be. So,
what's your first official best bet, Bob?
Oh, I like Chicago. They're -7.5 against Cleveland. I mean, Shedeur Sanders been okay. I mean, yards. If you look at his yards per pass play, 6.2 yards per pass play, pretty good, but I don't think it's sustainable. I mean, he's completed only 52% of his passes. He has a 37.6% success rate. There are 44 qualifying quarterbacks, and that success rate ranks 43rd out of 44. So I don't think that 6.2 yards per pass play is sustainable. I think he's due to regress. He's going to have against a pretty good defense. Sanders took a lot of sacks in college. His offensive line is probably down 3 starters if Conklin can't play. I don't think he will play. He's in concussion protocol. I don't think he practiced again today. So I think Sanders is going to take some sacks. I don't think he's also Njoku hasn't practiced all week after getting hurt last week on that touchdown catch. So it leaves Harold Fannin, which is great. Fannin's among the best tight ends in the league. But Chicago's defense is 9th in the league defending tight ends based on EPA per play per target against tight ends. So they do a pretty good job against tight ends. Now they only have to deal with one of them instead of both tight ends, probably. Cleveland runs a lot of heavy personnel, second highest rate in the league of running heavy personnel. And the Bears rank 3rd in the league relatively against heavy personnel compared to other formations. So I think it's a good matchup for Chicago's defense here. The Browns' strength is obviously their pass rush. They're 3rd in the league in pressure rate. Bears' offensive line, though, second in the league in pass blocking efficiency. So I don't think the Browns will have their normal success rushing the passer. And on the back end, their best cornerback, Denzel Ward, is banged up. He's got an injured calf. He says he's going to try to play. But with an injured calf, who knows? I mean, how successful he'll be in coverage with a bad calf, or if he'll play most of the snaps. So I think the Bears are in a good situation matchup-wise, and my model favors them by 11.5. So
wow.
I like the Bears, -7.5.
-7.5, the Bears for Dr. Bob. Will and Todd have already given their plays on the Thursday night game. So I get 2 here as we snake. I am on the Green Bay Packers. I laid 1.5 on it earlier in the week during Guessing Lines. Todd, I'm not sure if you're aware of that program, Guessing Lines. We do it Monday on a numbers game. Right now it's 2.5. I don't know what the official is on that, but I will lay it with that number as well. This is a step up in competition for the Broncos, who right now inhabit the #1 seed in the AFC. They are 11-2, but on their resume, the Broncos have beaten the Titans by 8. They have beaten the Jets by 2, the Giants by 1, the Raiders by 3, and the Commanders by 1. Oh, and the Raiders again by 7. This to me it will represent the difference between the NFC and the AFC. I know it's in Denver in the elevation, but the Packers less than a field goal kind of shocked me. I am on the Packers as pick #1 in this matchup. By the way, so NFC,
we're giving you -2, right?
-2.
Yeah, I think -2.
Yeah, fair. I agree. -2.
There is some 2.5 out there, but I think mostly -2.
-2. I like. And also, by the way, Will brought this up first, NFC versus AFC, just that market, that generic market. NFC right now is up to -150. I think Will called it. What was the first time you mentioned it, Will?
$1.25, something like that, or -1.5. This is one where I can't really find this here widely available. I think Caesars had it. I don't know if you've come across it and you guys can find it, but I do think it's a good bet.
Talking about to win the Super Bowl, because really the thinking is, unless it's the Chiefs on a run, somehow get in the playoffs and get to the Super Bowl, or the Bills, there is no AFC team that's going to be favored by. And right now it's minus 150. So that's like, what, minus 2.5 extra juice?
The Bills are not even going to be favored either, Gilly.
Well, I'm saying, but it's minus, but I'm just giving you the only scenarios where they could possibly be less right. than the minus 2.5, right? Because some of these could be ridiculous, right? Rams, Jags, or something like that, be way higher than that. Okay, so the Packers is the first one. The second one is the Cincinnati Bengals, plus 2.5, hosting the Baltimore Ravens. I cannot understand why the Ravens keep getting this market respect. Shout out to Todd, because I think Todd was the first person to say this on the group text. But I talked about it on the radio side this week, which is, has there ever been a team in recent memory? I'm sure there has. Maybe I'm being prisoner of the moment. But has there ever been a team in recent memory that has gone this long of an NFL season being overrated in the market week after week after week without the chops to really justify it? And when they were 1-5, when the Ravens were 1-5, I was one of the people saying they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to win the division. They're going to make the playoffs. They won 5 games in a row to go 6-5. And then I was immediately like, yeah, I don't see it. So I don't see it here. I don't know why the Bengals are not the favorite. I really don't. As bad as the Bengals have been and as bad as their defense has been, historically speaking, I don't think the Ravens are justified as a road favorite. So I got the Bengals plus the 2.5 as pick number 2 for me.
They also just beat them 2 weeks ago, didn't they?
They did that.
Yes.
They did that as well. That's right.
Great memory, Todd.
Thank you.
It reminds me of, and I think I said this on the group text, I remember there was 1 year with the Yankees that everyone said the Yankees were going to be this killer team and they're just amazing. And every single day they would be lined like ridiculously high and then they would lose every single day. They would just keep losing and the market would never adjust. They were like, nope, 190 again. Nope, 185 again. It didn't matter. It's like their priors wouldn't get erased. And I feel like the same thing is happening with the Ravens this year. And by the way, it's funny because when I looked at the board, I thought the Chiefs is the same thing this year. Minus 6? Why? Is it Herbert out?
By the way, the Chiefs can't stop taking money. That's a lot of times in Yankees history, though. Those are the great moments in sports betting history, right? The Yankees in 2003 against the Marlins, every night, the Marlins plus 190. And you're like, this can't be, right? And so it's the Washington Nationals in 2019, where I said it was your obligation to bet the Nationals. How are they dogs every night against the Astros? Right. Who had these that were, yeah, that's
those except in 2003, the Marlins won that one. They had one pitcher, this lefty, that threw like 84, 85 that would get crushed. Anderson, I want to say like Brian Anderson or something. Other than that, it was like Beckett and all these monster pitchers. Miguel Cabrera is a 19-year-old. That Marlin team was good. It reminds me, this team, you guys are talking about like the Yankees and what you just brought up. Remember Brady's last year with the Bucks, where they were just constantly overvalued and they just stunk. And week after week, they couldn't live up to it. And people were like, yeah, but maybe this is the week. But yeah, maybe this week. And it kind of never came. They might have won the division with like a losing record and they got stomped in the playoffs.
It's like sticky priors. That should be called sticky priors.
That's a great example, Will, because I remember Rufus coming on here and picking the Bucks over somebody, and I just lost it. I was like, how can we keep doing this with the Bucks? Yeah, that's a great example.
By the way, is Herbert injured? Why are the Chiefs minus 6 this week?
He has a fracture in his non-throwing hand, but he played this past week with
it. Right.
Yeah.
So why are the Kansas City is going to dominate that offensive line? The Chargers offensive line is dreadful.
There it is.
Well, that might be true, Bob, and I'm not disputing you.
Yeah, I think the line's gotten out of hand. I mean, six
is a lot. Yeah, it
seems like, I mean, it's getting absurd, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't be betting. I don't want to bet a team with that much of a mismatch defensive line versus offensive line. I don't want to be betting on the Chargers, but I do think the line's gotten higher than it probably should be.
And we just saw the Chiefs.
I'm not playing the game.
We just saw the Chiefs defense in the second half against the Texans just absolutely destroying the Texans offense. They had no answers whatsoever until Andy Reid made that stupid call that sort of gave him a get out of jail free card in that game. So that's the most recent memory of the Chiefs defense. Will, your number 2 is?
What do we have for Bills Patriots?
Side or total?
Side.
Bills Patriots.
I think -1. Bills minus one.
I will take the Buffalo Bills. I will lay the point. It just shows you what a weird NFL year this is. Gil, you picked against the Broncos. I'm picking against the Patriots. We have two teams on double-digit winning streaks, and they're both home underdogs, just to show you what kind of an upside-down year this is. This stat, courtesy of Stucky, the Action Network, fourth downs this year. The Patriots are let's see, 14 of 18. Their opponents are 7 of 22. So Patriots have gone for it 18 times. They've gotten it 14 times. That's basically a turnover. Every time you go for it on fourth down, that's an unsustainable clip there. 7 for 22 is obviously, you know, under expectation. Fumble recoveries, Patriots 10th luckiest team in terms of recovering fumbles. And Drake May played college football at North Carolina. He grew up at North Carolina. I know he's on the Patriots, but it's not like he's played in cold weather a bunch here in his young career. Allen lives for this. He's used to it. I'm still skeptical of this Patriots team overall. I know they're off a bye in their home, but I will take what I think is the better team. In a close game, which I expect it to be, I'll just take Allen over May here. I'll take the Bills minus the points.
Will, I'm supposed to say that I'm not happy that I'm on the same side as you on that, but I am on the same side. That's my third.
Yeah, me too.
I'll just step in. Oh, you too, Todd?
No, I'm not making it a best bet or anything, but okay. I like the Bills side.
You like the Bills side. I made four bets during guessing lines on Monday. The two that I just mentioned, Green Bay and Cincinnati. The third was Buffalo. A lot of the same reasons. New England's schedule. They've had the easiest schedule in the league. Yes, they beat Buffalo earlier in the year. But that was a game where Buffalo had two really game-changing turnovers deep in New England territory, one deep in their own territory. So it's like a 14-point swing minimum there. So I'm with you. I'm with you on the Bills. By the way, the fourth play I made, and it was a total of four on guessing lines, was the Steelers. But now there's the TJ Watt lung issue, which we don't know what the story is, so I can't really recommend that one. So the Bills are my third. You, Bob, you like that side?
Yeah, the model has the Bills by 2.5. So
I like it.
Value there.
All right. Todd, you're second.
I actually had the Bills at first also written down, but then I changed my mind. But I'm glad that you guys both like it and that I also almost liked it, because then that would have assured a loss if I would have taken it as well. So I'm definitely not taking the Bills. I am going to go with under in the... Actually, what number do you have now for Packers Denver?
23.
I don't think that's it.
No, 42.5.
42.5.
By the way, is it true that the Denver University of Denver named their team after Dr. Bob, Denver Pioneers? Is that correct, Gilly?
The Pioneers. Yeah, I think so. When I moved here.
It's good knowledge, Todd.
Hold up. Yeah.
No, there's a guy in the sports book who sits next to me and he can't believe all the team names that I know. Now, I'm not like Jeffrey Parles level who can do
this
every
is my
team.
Stupid human pet trick is college football, college nicknames.
Right.
What's that?
Right. You could do.
Yeah, same as mine. You're my stupid human pet trick.
Oh, on who's Letterman, who's Fairfield, Dr. Bob?
The Stags.
How about North Florida, Dr. Bob?
Oh, jeez. No.
Don't
know that one.
We got you on North Florida.
Effort.
Got me on North Florida.
That's it is Osprey, right?
Osprey. Yeah.
Best person I've ever seen at this is Jeff Parles. Jeff Parles can do everyone, but I'm pretty good. I'm pretty solid.
Next week's Megapod guest, Jeff Parles. Just want to point that out.
And he could do them also. If you send in your NJITs and your Cal Northridges, and he'll give them to you. Okay. I'm going to go with you guys moved it on me to 42.5, so maybe I don't want it anymore, but I'm going to do it anyways. I'm going under in that same Green Bay game, under 42.5 in the Green Bay-Denver game. I checked the weather. It's going to be nice, actually, in Denver, so that doesn't help me. But I've watched too many Denver games that are just grind-a-thons and come down to like 18-17 or 20-16. I mean, these games are just, I know the Washington game went overtime and got there to like 27-20, but they just don't play high scoring games. And while Green Bay has played a couple of high scoring games lately, including the one on Thanksgiving, they had a tendency to play a bunch of real grinders as well earlier in the season with Carolina. They shut down the Lions in the first week of the season. There's been a bunch. I just feel like the strength on both these teams is the defense, even with Love. And, I think Green Bay's defense is outstanding. I think Denver's defense is outstanding. I can't stand Bo Nix. I mean, who knows where he's going to throw the ball. So, give me the under 42.5. I'm looking for like a 21-20, 21-17 kind of grinder in the elevation. And, hopefully I can get there on a classic Denver under.
Good use of elevation. Well done. Bob, you get two. What is your second and third here?
I like the Rams. It was -5 on Monday when I released it, but I still like the Rams at -6, which is what the current line is. Detroit's offense not as good this year as they were last year. They lost the coordinator, Ben Johnson, two starters on the interior offensive line are not on this year's team that were on last year's team. They're averaging 0.09 expected points added per play fewer this year than last year, which 0.09 adds up in over 60-something plays a game. So their offense isn't as good. Goff has been a little more sensitive to pressure up the middle this year. The Lions' interior offensive line has been a problem. They rank 25th in the league in percent of pressures allowed from the interior. And I think the Rams have, aside from having great defensive ends, Kobe Turner and Braden Diskey are 11th in pass rushing efficiency as far as interior linemen go as a tandem. So I think they'll be able to collapse the pocket on Goff. Defensively, Detroit's maybe having some issues in the secondary. Deion Branch suffered an Achilles injury, so he's out for the season. DJ Reed, their cornerback, hasn't played well since coming back from his hamstring strain. I mean, just last week he allowed 105 yards to CeeDee Lamb, and this week he'll be up against Puka Nacua most likely, who leads the league in success rate. I think it's a pretty good matchup. Also, Detroit, I mean, you know, they win every time they lose. They won 15 in a row after a loss and covered 14 of those 15 games. After a win, the last four times they won a game, they come right back and lost and failed to cover. That's not why I'm betting the game, but it doesn't hurt that Detroit's coming off a win. The model has the Rams by 8.2. So I think there's good value on the Rams here. So Rams minus six.
Rams minus six. Bob laying the wood on Chicago, laying the wood on the Rams. Value is value. By the way, we lost Twitter. Twitter's down. Boo. Okay, Bob, your third and final
Before Bob goes to his third, can I just ask him a quick question? Bob, one of my pet peeves is when talking heads get on and say, well, they're out two of their defensive linemen and their starting cornerback and blah, blah, blah. And they never tell you, oh, and the backup stinks. They just say...
Everything's relative to who's taking their place.
Right. Now, do you have in your modeling, and I would assume because you're more accurate than these people, but do you have in your modeling that when the right tackle is out, you know that the right tackle backup stinks and it's a big drop-off?
This is the best thing Bob ever done.
Most of the time, like a lot of times you don't know what the backup's done because maybe he doesn't have experience, but most of the time the backup has a certain number of snaps. So we're looking at how many, you know, what their body work has been. And there was one... Earlier, I mentioned the Chicago, what was it, the Chicago Cleveland one of the games. Oh, it was the Tampa Bay Atlanta under Tampa Bay's defense being without linebacker Dennis, and people think, oh, that could be a negative, but not necessarily in this matchup, because Bijan Robinson for the Falcons, this is a good example, is third in the league in yards per route run for running backs. And Dennis is not particularly good at defending the pass, whereas his backup, Deion Jones, only allows 6.6 yards per target to running back. So in that case, while Dennis overall is probably a better player than Jones, Jones, the backup, is much better defending the pass. So in this particular matchup, that might be good that Dennis is out. So it also depends on the matchup.
Everything,
the backup is, everything's compared to the level of the backup.
There's so much I learned sitting on the lap or the edge of the knee of Dr. Bob over the years. And there's so many things that lessons to be learned. And a couple of things that if someone asked me, what does he do better than anybody else? And Bob, you'll tell me if you agree with this or not, but there's a couple of things. One, you know, also like in matchups, I remember in college basketball, we would sit there at Blue Barn and we would talk about teams that are like really bad from 3-point range. But if the other team's 3-point defense was really bad, right? Advantage team with the bad defense because it doesn't exploit their weakness. Like he was great at that kind of thing, I always thought. And then what you were just talking about, Todd, which is, you know, how Phil Steele and then everybody regurgitates the Phil Steele stuff. Oh, they're losing 8 starters on offense. And Bob was the first person ever to just say to me like, yeah, but like, did they suck? Because if they suck, that's a good thing, right? You know, that was just a couple Dr. Bob-isms through the years.
It was like the classic, like, there's been two good examples, like Christian Hackenberg, who I just thought was horrible at Penn State. And why the Jets drafted this guy? Because he's got a strong arm. And people are like, oh, they lost Hackenberg. I'm like, Penn State's going to be so much better without Hackenberg. And I think it was Trace McSorley, who was like a three-star, two-star recruit, comes in and Penn State lights it up the next year because they don't have Hackenberg throwing incompletions to wide open guys. You know, so sometimes you are better off. It's like Riley Leonard, like, oh, they lost Riley Leonard, Notre Dame this year. I'm like, well, great. Riley Leonard is a mediocre college passing quarterback who runs pretty well, but whoever takes the place of Riley Leonard is going to be better than Riley Leonard. And certainly Notre Dame's offense was much better this year. So people think, oh, another one this year, BYU. I was 6-2 on my win totals in college football this year. And the ninth one, and I had it written down, ready to release, was BYU over 6.5. And then the odds moved that morning when I was going to release them. They became like -125. And I said, oh, I'm going to bet it up to -120. So I didn't release it, but I had BYU underrated all year. And people thought, well, they lost their quarterback. Retzlaff went to Tulane. I'm like, he only completed 57.5% of his passes. Like, why is this guy so hard to replace? You know,
plus
and people
the poor
just
ancestry.
Bob,
they lost their quarterback.
No anti-Semitism on this podcast, Bob.
Yeah, maybe. So it's like people just think, oh, they lost their quarterback and Retzlaff is good. Is Retzlaff good completing 57.5% of his passes? Or does BYU have a good system that gets guys open down the field? Which is what it is. I don't care if Bachmeyer's never thrown a pass before. He's got to be at least as good as Retzlaff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People overreact to this. Oh, they lost the starter. Oh, they lost all these.
Yeah.
It depends. It really just depends, you know.
This wasn't designed to be a tribute to Dr. Bob, but I do recognize how fortunate I am to have just been where I was when I was, and to just, there's so many other things. And now it's popped out of my head at the same time that I was thinking of it. But there's so many little things like that. One of the things that, you know, modelers, that they're too, you know, they don't have a humility of their numbers. I would watch, like, we'd go to Sloan Sports Conference Friday night, people would go out. Bob was like in his room doing everything. We never saw Bob at a conference where he was on a panel. He'd go to his panel and then he would just handicap all night. And I remember saying to him, I said, maybe you leave out the Sun Belt just so you can hang out with us. He's like, I can't do that. But some of the, one of the things that I love from that is people don't realize, like, Bob would do his modeling and then, you know, he would manually then take out the noise, right? So kneel downs being the simplest example, right? Go to every game and take those out. And it was just such an amazing thing to observe through the years.
I still do that. I don't know how much of a difference this makes, but I've just been doing it for so long. Do you realize if a running back runs for 5 yards and gets the ball knocked out and the ball rolls 25 yards forward and the defense recovers it, he gets credit for a 30-yard run.
He gets the yards.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
He gets 30 yards.
On the props, too?
So I look at, yeah. So he'll get his 5 yards plus the 25 yards that the fumble went forward, even if the other team recovered it. The running back gets credit for those running yards. I take out everything. I look at, I search every box score play-by-play for fumble, kneel down, muff, whatever, and I take those yards out. If a punt sails over through the punter's hands and is minus 25 yards, that's a rushing play for minus 25 yards because the punter couldn't catch a punt. That's random. I take that out of my stats. And in the long run, maybe at the end of the season, that doesn't really matter much. But early in the season, that kind of stuff can make a difference.
I've always done that.
I've been super detailed in cleaning up my box scores. And I go through the play-by-play and search for that kind of stuff.
That's what I like. Pedanticness. Pedanticness wins.
You're not allowed to do that. He'd lose his mind. I love that.
No, people don't understand.
I can't go out to dinner. Like, I've got to do the conference tournaments tomorrow, and I got to do the player adjustments and rotation adjustments. And
now I should point this out also. At the same time, right? Again, I'll use the Blue Barn example. I remember Bob was on a roll, and we'd go to Blue Barn every night. I would sit on one corner, and Bob would sit on the other corner. And one day, for whatever reason, I sat in his chair. He goes, no, you got to sit there. So at the same time, he still has that gambling mishugas in his head at times as well. I love that.
So it's just because this was my better side.
Yeah,
this is my better side, Gil.
It's a better side.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to get the final ones in. Bob, your last best bet is?
Yeah, I got the TJ Watt news this morning. I already released Pittsburgh at -3.5 earlier. He's probably not going to play if he's in the hospital on Wednesday, but you never know. And he is TJ Watt, and he could play. But I still think there's some value on Pittsburgh here. The matchups are pretty good. The Steelers have been super dink and dunk all season long. And in the last week, they're facing a lot of blitz from the Baltimore Ravens. And Aaron Rodgers says, great, I'll just chuck the ball down the field super accurately against one-on-one coverage. And he had three deep passes for 121 yards against the Baltimore blitz last week. Coming into the game, he only had seven completions all year of 20 air yards or more. And now they're facing a Dolphins defense that likes to blitz. They blitz the third highest rate in the league. So I think Rodgers is going to try to take advantage of that again. If anybody is accurate throwing against the blitz over his career, it's been Rodgers. And he showed again last week that he still got that accuracy and knows where to go with the ball when faced with the blitz. The other advantage I think Pittsburgh has, Kenneth Gainwell is fourth in the league among running backs in yards per route run among running backs. A pretty favorable matchup against the Miami defense is 30th in the league in expected points added allowed to opposing running backs. So I think there's some advantages that the Steelers have against the blitz and in those, you know, running dump offs to Gainwell. On the other side of the ball, the Steelers blitz a lot. You know, the Steelers are pretty good against play action pass. They're pretty good, you know, again, you know, they blitz a lot. Tua Tagovailoa ranks 26th in the league relatively against the blitz compared to a standard pass rush. And the Dolphins have the fifth highest play action rate in the league, and the Steelers are really good against play action. The Miami offense is the most similar in what they do to the Indianapolis Colts with Daniel Jones. And Pittsburgh only allowed 5.7 yards per pass play to Jones, which is Daniel Jones' lowest of the league. So I think you got a similarly good matchup for Pittsburgh's defense against what Miami likes to do. But I think the matchup works there. They got an advantage with Cameron Hayward in the middle of that defensive line going against a rookie left guard who's 57th out of 59 in pass blocking efficiency. So I think they'll get some pressure up the middle. Tua, I bet on Miami last week as one of my bets. And they won, but that's the first time Tua Tagovailoa has ever won a game that has been under 45 degrees.
That's right.
But it wasn't that bad. It was 37 degrees. It was pretty calm. It wasn't big wind chill. But it's going to be in the teens on Monday night in Pittsburgh. So I think Tua is going to go back to struggling. And Miami in general is a bully. They're very good against bad teams, and they're not so good against good teams. Since McDaniel has been there, let me look up this stat. They're 4-16 against the spread against teams that are 500 or better, as long as they're not getting more than 6 points. So they have a couple of those where they get bigger points in the cover, but getting less than six or favored against a 500 or better team, 4-16 against the number under McDaniel. Also not very good off a win under McDaniel. They're 3-11 getting points off a win. So once again, better team now coming off a win. With Watt playing, I get the Steelers by 5.5. Without him, I get the Steelers by 4. So he's worth about 1.5, which is a lot for a defensive player. But I still like the matchups for the Steelers. And I still think there's a tiny bit of value. And if Watt doesn't play, I think that line might go down to 3. So I would wait on that if you're looking to play the Steelers, because I think the line's already maybe trending down a little bit, starting to see a little bit of 3. Mostly still 3.5, but I think if he's out, I think that line will go down to 3. And then I think there's certainly good value at -3, even without TJ Watt. So I'm going to make the Steelers my third play.
When did you release that Pittsburgh play?
I think on Monday morning it was 3.5 even.
Yeah, I'm guessing lines for me. I immediately saw that line. I'm like, are you kidding me with this line? So
should have been just to be clear, five and a half right off the bat.
Just to be clear about JJ Watt, reported. So he's experiencing lung discomfort. He experienced lung discomfort at practice apparently yesterday, Wednesday. We're doing this Thursday morning. Watt reportedly sustained the injury. I didn't know this part. Sustained the injury while receiving. Was this the same injury? Yeah. Watt reportedly sustained the injury while receiving treatment at the team's facility and has been hospitalized since Wednesday. So sustained the injury, whatever that turn of a phrase means. He was unaware. Tomlin was unaware when or how Watt's symptoms started. So they're not really sure what's going on yet.
Was down there. He was at the casino and he went to that really bad Chinese restaurant in that down there. It's called Me On. It's just about this. I love Chinese food. I'll be honest with you. I've never had Chinese. I didn't like. You go there, they have maybe one dish that's edible. I saw JJ Watt down there. He ordered the pork dumplings and it was all downhill after that. And now you got him down in Montefiore Hospital. What are you going to do? You can't take them guys down at Rivers Restaurant. Restaurants are horrible.
Well, there we go. We broke some news. That's the report from on the ground report. PJ Watts along. Someone else, by the way, we go before we get the last two picks from Todd and Will. Someone on Twitter today during a numbers game about this game, knowing I had the Steelers, he said, also there is a trend this year, which I had no idea about and I didn't verify, but he said the game after teams play the Jets,
yeah,
they're 1-11 against the Amazing. Spread. And so that would apply easy. To the Dolphins this week. That's I don't know if random. There's any rhyme or reason to that.
There's no reason for that. Why would you be struggling after playing the Jets?
No idea.
Overconfidence?
No
you
idea.
You suffer from overconfidence?
Maybe that's what it is.
There's nothing to that.
Maybe that's what it is. This it sounds like the old Ravens,
right? We're super confident now.
The old Ravens, when they were like the tough guys, when you played the Ravens, you sucked the next week. That's what that's
that called. Makes a little more sense.
Yeah. All right, Todd, your last pick is?
What's the line down there in 49er land?
12.5.
Rand. 12.5.
No, whoops. I accidentally couldn't stop talking Yinzer there for a minute. What do you got? 12.5? I'm going to take the Niners minus 12.5 here. The Titans early in the year could not cover a point spread. And they were horrendous against the spread. Couldn't really do anything. Now all of a sudden, they've covered a whole bunch of games. And I just like to go against that kind of team after they've had a bunch of covers, because I don't really believe that they've improved that much, the Titans. I just think, happenstance. A couple of these covers were happenstance. Like the Chargers, they covered the game because they got a pick six and a punt return touchdown. There was the game against
Arizona.
Arizona. Oh well, don't even start.
Wasn't that the Arizona one where they
DeMarcado. Yeah. We lost.
Then they had the Arizona intercepted the ball to seal the game. Then they fumbled it on the return.
Yes. Wow. How we lost my survivor pick and a
user. Me too.
We've only talked about it 1,000 times. The DeMarcado fumble game is going.
Wait,
to
Arizona
go
lost that game. I turned that game off. Arizona it's
the,
lost.
It's officially the worst bad bet of all time.
That guy should be cut.
Yeah. He should be cut, right?
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, as soon as you drop a ball, that's about you and not about the team, and you should be cut.
I agree with what Will said. Can we just have this moment? We all, because everybody likes to say there's the worst bad beat. Ours was the worst bad
it's
beat.
Official,
of all.
It's official that is the worst bad beat of all time.
Probably.
Anyways, my Niners. I didn't give you my full pick. I just think the Niners are starting to come into their own. While I don't like Shanahan against another really awesome coach against regular coaches, I feel like he's head and shoulders above a lot of these, especially the coach you're going to get for Tennessee. And I just feel like Tennessee's due for another stinker. They just had their a great cover against the Browns. So now they're going to come out and lay an egg like they did against Jacksonville, lost 25-3. I feel like this is a perfect spot for them to just get thrown into the wood chipper and get absolutely blasted by the Niners.
There is some history in what you're saying. The Titans are 0-10 against the spread following their last 10 victories.
That's so interesting.
When you say they're due to maybe lay an egg, there is a little bit of history.
It's
to
just
that.
So hard for them to cover games that when they cover a couple in a row, or cover say 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 5, to me, I feel like they're going to regress back to it. I mean, everything has to go right. There was the Houston game; they were losing, they were not covering, and they went 95 yards on the last drive to lose 16-13, which was another game they had no business covering. So I feel like everything has to go right for them to cover. I just don't feel like it's going to happen this week, and I'm going to go with the Niners minus 12.5.
Wilson Hilson, last pick of the day. What do you got?
What do we have for Seahawks Colts?
Seahawks Colts.
14. Four. Oh, wait, down to 13.5.
Wow, it touched 14? That's the point of resistance.
Yeah, went up to 14 this morning.
Wow.
I will lay the 13.5. I'm sure none of the numbers agree with this, but I just don't know how you put a number on a game where one team just doesn't have a quarterback. I don't know how the Colts score. I see 14.5 for a team total. I prefer the Colts team total under more than anything. But how do they score? How do they get past midfield? I feel like the Seattle defense can cover this by themselves. A very, ball hawking type of unit. I think they'll create turnovers. Whether it's Riley Leonard, who just Dr. Bob said a few minutes ago, was a mediocre college quarterback. Terrible. Or Rivers, who hasn't played in 5 years.
Do you see how this fat Rivers is? Rivers got blubber. He's literally got blubber in his gut.
I would rather have Rivers Rusty Rivers than Leonard.
What do you do, Bob? That's a great question. Wait, if let's say they tomorrow they elevate Rivers and they say, you know what, it's going to be Rivers. Which, by the way, they haven't said. They said if Riley can go, Riley Leonard can go, he starts. I don't know what's going to happen. But let's say it's Rivers. Do you just throw that game out?
Well, if he play, yeah, I mean, adjust for everything. But, yeah, would I throw it out of my model if that's the only game he played and he stunk it up? Maybe. I adjusted 7.5
all in 5 years. Like, what do you do with it?
I don't know. I adjusted 7.5 points, assuming it's going to be Leonard. And I think I'd probably just keep it at 7.5 points. That puts me right around the market anyway. But if it's Rivers, I don't know, at least he knows the offense and can get the ball out and could read defenses. But I mean, it's been so long. Defensive has changed a little bit since he's played. What a mess. I mean, this seems like something like 27-10 to me.
My pregnancy model, I moved Rivers down one baby due to the fact that he's going to be, you know, not home to impregnate his wife, which he usually does.
He might get his balls busted.
The only 44-year-olds to ever play quarterback in the NFL to start.
George Blanda,
who played to 48 and used to have gray lamb chop sideburns and smoked on the sidelines.
What age was Brady back then?
All right, I'll do this. This is a trivia question for Bob. I'll give the five. There's five players before Rivers. Rivers would be the sixth if he plays. I'll spot you four of them: Tom Brady, George Blanda, Vinny Testaverde, and Warren Moon. Can you name the fifth?
Well, this is a 40-year-old quarterbacks.
44-year-old quarterbacks to start a game in NFL.
You gave me Warren Moon already?
I gave you Warren Moon. Here are the Testaverde,
I knew. Brady, I knew.
Yeah, Blanda, Brady, Testaverde, Warren Moon, and
I think
George
I
Blanda,
know it.
Billy Kilmer.
Kilmer.
Steve DeBerg, right? Is it Steve DeBerg?
Steve DeBerg. I gave it out on the show.
Ah, good one.
Steve DeBerg, yeah. So Rivers would be the sixth if that happens. It's a mess, and it's a mess beyond belief because they went all in on Sauce Gardner. So their draft picks are gone, too. It's like,
Just two weeks ago, they're up 11 on the Chiefs with a chance to look, oh, man, they're going to win this game. They got a chance to be the one seed. Now they're just like, it's amazing how quickly things change.
Did they not have a third-string quarterback?
Leonard.
Richardson got hurt. Richardson's hurt. He was their third string.
Brett Rippon has been
on their backup
squad. Brett Rippon. And by the way, the emergency quarterback is Tyler Warren, if it came to that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, let him run some wildcat.
Yeah.
They should go.
Tyler Warren's one of the best football players. He's one of the best football players I've ever seen in college. I mean, he made Penn State's offense. He's unbelievable.
You know why
Denver guy, Toddy?
You know why he wears 44?
Saints. Was their game was 28-3 when the Denver played the Saints and they played a quarterback that wasn't a quarterback? Was it the Saints?
Kendall Hinton or something?
I think it was the Saints didn't have a quarterback, right?
Yeah.
It's Broncos.
Yes.
Right. It was 28-3 final.
Oh, and they played the wide receiver.
They played the wide receiver from Wake Forest, I believe it was. Kendall Hinton.
Was it Hilton?
Yeah.
T.Y. Hilton?
Kendall Hinton.
Line went to like 17 or 18 in the Broncos. The favorite covered.
28-3. I remember it was like it was yesterday. 28-3 was the final.
By the way, Tyler Warren wore 44 in college because his favorite player ever was John Riggins.
I love him
for that. By the way, Will, did you finish your whole thing or did we interrupt you completely?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I just don't know how the Colts score. I don't know how they move the ball. Seahawks will probably get some turnovers here. So, I mean, there's always ways to where things can go wrong when you're laying that many points. And I believe the Seahawks do have the Rams on deck. But to me, this has, 30-10 written all over it.
All right. Favorite teaser of the week. Two-leg, 6-point teaser of the week. Bob, you got the first stab at it.
I will go with Chicago -1.5 with Washington +8.5.
There you go. Let's go, Skins.
-1.5 with Washington Commanders -8.
Marcus Mariota with the start.
You want my teaser? My teaser is going to be Bears. Also Bears -1.5. And I'm putting it with the Bengals +8.5. I just don't see how Baltimore's going to win by that big of a margin.
Bears Bengals is my exact one, too. Sorry, Will. Okay,
Bears Bengals for.
Yeah, I'll go Saints Bengals.
Saints Bengals.
Well, you guys are doing it too fast. Bears Bengals for Gilly.
Yep.
+8.5. And then what does Willie have?
Bengals Saints.
Saints.
You guys want to take a stab at what Carolina's straight up record is as a favorite of more than one?
This year?
Since when?
Just going back a few years.
Oh.
How many games?
17 in their last 17 games as a favorite of more than a point. 2-15 straight up.
There we go.
Is that what they are?
Carolina.
Willie, who do you have again?
2-15. Wow.
Untrustworthy favorite on the planet.
Willie, who's your teaser? Because I want to write it down.
Bengals, Cincinnati, the Burrow. They got Higgins. They got Chase. Okay. Cincinnati Bengals. Used to have Boomer Esiason. And then the Saints.
But what's the number?
Drew Brees played there for a while. New Orleans.
Is that plus? Saints plus 8.5. Okay.
Yeah.
Todd seems unfamiliar.
No, I never heard of them.
Dick could coach them for a while.
When Matt Rhule was the coach of the Panthers, I remember when Parles was the co-host. There was like some stat about the Panthers then where if the opponent scored 17, they never won. It was incredible.
Yeah. They were 3-0 one of those years with Darnold.
17, not 23. Incredible. 17. They were like 0-23 under Rhule, something like that. It was incredible. Anyway, so that number doesn't surprise me. Final two questions then of each and every Megapod. And thank you again to Dr. Bob. What is this?
First question is, Dr. Bob, I took Iowa State 25-1 to win it all in the college B-ball. Do you like that number that I got?
Yes.
Okay. Ooh. Thank you.
I like Iowa State.
Do you like...
Although, a little bit of a letdown spot tonight against Iowa.
Well, they call them Drake. If they're not really playing Iowa, they're playing Drake.
Yeah.
Basically.
Bob's 14th still, appearance on the
Drake. Megapod. Drake is a feisty underdog.
Yes.
That head coach is a feisty underdog. A little bit of a letdown spot tonight. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was a close game against Iowa. Single digits, maybe. I think, what are they, plus 10.5 or 11?
Plus 11.5.
But yeah, I do like Iowa State.
Bob, do you like this? Joe Pita texting. Niners 25-1 to win it all.
No.
Okay.
Right. Their defense is just not good enough.
Okay. Final two questions then. Bob, we'll start with you. Which of the big favorites, if I come to you from the future and I say one of these favorites lost outright, which is the answer? Your choices. Bears, 7.5-point favorites at the Browns. The Eagles, 11.5-point favorites hosting the Raiders. Jaguars, 13.5-point favorites hosting the Jets. Houston, 9.5-point favorites hosting the Cardinals. Man, a lot of big favorites this week. Niners, 12.5-point favorites hosting the Titans. And Seahawks, 13.5-point favorites hosting the Colts. I'll throw out all the others. If I came to you from the future, I said one of those teams lost. Who is it?
Well, I mean, mathematically, it's probably Chicago, but I have Chicago as a bet. So I'm going to say Houston. Inconsistent on offense. Arizona actually hasn't been that bad. They move the ball okay. They're not bad on defense. I mean, they're not a bad team. So I would say Houston is most likely to get upset.
That's my answer, too.
Todd, me, too.
Everybody's got Houston as that answer. Okay, and then the final question. You're forced, Bob, to play a side in every single one of the 16 NFL games this week, but you got one free pass, one game that you got as a bingo square you didn't have to play. What's the game you want no part of?
I think it's Tennessee-San Francisco. The model's right on the number. I know Tennessee's terrible off a win, but the Niners, I think Ward is decent when he's not getting pressured. And the Niners are last in the league at pressuring the quarterback since they've lost their best two defensive players. So I think Ward can complete enough passes or maybe get a backdoor cover. Who knows? But that one is the one I can't even, in my pool, I'm like, I don't know. Am I flipping a coin here? I don't know who I take. So I think the Niners-Tennessee game, I don't want anything.
What kind of pool are you in?
Just a spread pool.
Just a spread pool. Okay. Toddy? Small.
I don't really... I don't know about taking the Cowboys -5.5. I just don't trust them. And then, of course, Minnesota, I will never bet on with that quarterback situation. So I'll just pass on that game.
Will.
One of these weeks, maybe the Eagles get back on track, but I'm not going to bet to find out. The Raiders are kind of broken themselves. You can have that one. Raiders, Eagles, no thank you.
The correct answer is Giants, Commanders, everybody.
That's a good one, too.
Giants.
By the way, don't be surprised if there's a lot of points in Giants Commanders. I would not be shocked at all to see, the moving up and down the field, both those teams. You know, Giants have played a lot of over games that people don't realize. They're not that bad, the Giants, on offense.
No Jaden Daniels for Washington, but Jackson Dart is still a go for the Giants. Is that true? Jackson Dart, yeah.
I don't see why it wouldn't. Yeah. Did you see the coach? I didn't watch the Hard Knocks yet, but I guess the coach was on Twitter, social media, where Kafka's ranting and raving, and we're going to go 4-0 and all this tough guy stuff. And he's swearing. I was like, is this the same guy that just punted down 15 in the fourth quarter against the Patriots on Monday? That's the funny thing. These guys are so macho and all this. And it's like fourth down. Oh, we're going to punt the ball away like little pansies.
In the moment, crazy. Not so much. Yeah. All right. We lost Twitter, but thanks for listening on the audio side, as always. To Todd Wishnev at T Wishnev on Twitter, the star of the Showtime docuseries Action, and still available on Showtime. And Will Hill, Shoulda Bet More podcast. 3 times a week he puts it out, and he writes for Fox Sports. You have a piece out on foxsports.com?
Yeah, Fox Sports, underdogs, 2 underdogs to win outright. I think 4 in a row there, and then a best bet for every game. So appreciate it. Check that out. And rate, review, subscribe. My podcast, this podcast, Gilly's not going to remember, so I'm going to remind you.
Rate, review, subscribe. I'm supposed to say that. 15 years, I never remember to say that. Rate, review, subscribe. We'd appreciate it. And Dr. Bob, everybody, we should have, I'm a terrible host because I never even said, at Dr. Bob Sports on Twitter. DrBobSports.com, DrBobSports.com, DrBobSports.com. Not only because you might be like, why should I, if I'm not signing up, does he have anything on there? Yes, he has a lot of free analysis for college football, college basketball, everything that's going on there, NFL. But you can also obviously subscribe to the service as well. Bob, did I cover it? Is there anything else I miss that people should?
Yeah, no free analysis in basketball, too many games. But the NFL, anything that's not a for clients is on the website for free. And there's a lot of good fantasy information, mashup stuff that you might not get anywhere else. So I think that's worth reading for sure. And in college football, tons of free analysis during the regular season, but not in the postseason.
Bob, we have a question from Danny Higgins. Will Bob also be on a numbers game this week, or does this mean he won't be on?
I can be on tomorrow. I'm on an NFL heater.
There you go. He's on. One of the show. There we go. He'll be on the show.
I dropped the, hey, if it's light snow, it is higher scoring. Bet the over on the Bills.
That was a fantastic handicap. Fantastic handicap. Because with the instinct is, hey, it's snow, it's going to be no scoring. It favors
light snow is higher scoring traditionally, 1 point higher than the national, than the average, than otherwise. Yeah.
Dr. Bob, everybody. Bob Stoll, by the way, Stoll, if you're wondering if he has a last name. He does. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for coming on the show, first of all, the three of you. Thank you all for listening. Good luck with all your bets, week 15 in the National Football League.